From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast, and this is Maryland Morning. Tens of thousands of working Marylanders earn little enough to qualify for the federal and state earned income tax credits, but many are not applying for it and failing to collect tens of millions of dollars. We ask Robin McKinney, director of the Maryland Cash Campaign, why that is and what duty employers have to get the word out. Then, legendary pianist and Peabody faculty member Leon Fleischer joins Tom Hall, and so does his son, singer and composer Julian Fleischer. They play a few songs from each of their new albums. Plus, the Jewish Book Festival is this weekend at the Jewish Museum of Maryland. Leroy Hofberger, a Baltimore businessman and philanthropist, will share his memoir, Measure of a Life, and shares it today with us. First, the news.
I'm Nathan Sterner, and if you were listening to Maryland Morning Live, I'd be bringing you the latest Maryland news right about now. You can catch the live show Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 9 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 FM in Baltimore and Frederick, 106.9 FM in Ocean City, and online at WYPR.org. For now, you're listening to the Maryland Morning Podcast. Thanks for downloading us. Let's get the show underway.
Good morning. Welcome to Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. We're just weeks away from 2015, and that can mean only one thing. Soon it will be tax season. Most people loathe tax time, but for some it can be a boon. Some low-income families are eligible for the Earned Income Tax Credit, which can mean an infusion of welcome income up to nearly $6,000. But often the credit goes unclaimed. In Baltimore City alone, in 2012, it's estimated that $50 million was unclaimed. Eligible Baltimore County residents left an estimated $32 million on the table. In Anne Arundel, $15 million. With me to talk about the Earned Income Tax Credit is Robin McKinney. She's director and co-founder of the Maryland Cash Campaign, a nonprofit that helps low-income families find financial stability. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
How does the Earned Income Tax Credit work?
Well, the Earned Income Tax Credit, all you need to do is actually file a tax return. It's that simple. There are, of course, eligibility requirements, as everything has with the Internal Revenue Service. But if you're working, you're making less than $53,000, whether or not you have a child, you're going to be eligible for the Earned Income Tax Credit. So literally all people have to do is file a tax return. At the Maryland Cash Campaign, we promote free tax preparation. We have a network of sites across the state. Here in Baltimore City, there's a great network of groups of the Baltimore Cash Campaign. So we think helping people to get this great credit, which, as you said, is worth thousands of dollars. The average one was over $2,100 in the state of Maryland. Maximize every single dollar of that credit and get it back using free tax prep.
So one files a tax return, including like a 1040EZ,
can be a simple tax return, and it's a form that gets filed as part of their regular tax return.
But do you have to identify yourself as a potential claimant of the Earned Income Tax Credit, or does the IRS do that when they look at your
tax
return?
Preparer? Yep, when your tax preparer is, or if you're doing it yourself using software, it is basically looking at your income, it's looking at if you have dependents or not, and how long they were with you over the course of the year. So it's actually just a couple questions that the tax preparer will ask. And then through the software and through your tax preparer, that's how they determine that you're eligible. So if folks think they might be eligible and they haven't been getting it, it's worth asking your tax preparer or double checking your software if you're doing your own tax return.
Why was the Earned Income Tax Credit created?
It was created actually as a way to offset Social Security taxes and as a way to help low-income workers to reward work. You know, many low-wage workers, they're not making enough money to always sustain their families. And so what the Earned Income Tax Credit does is it helps to make them whole. It helps to make their wages, as we heard at an event yesterday, an economist said, it really juices up their wages, which I sort of like that idea that they're getting their wages juiced up.
And you said the average in Maryland is about how much?
About $2,100. And what's great about the Earned Income Tax Credit is, so we have this wonderful federal credit that we've had since 1975. But here in the state of Maryland, we also have a state Earned Income Tax Credit. And so people have this additional benefit that they might be eligible for. And we're leaving money on the table with that, too. As you said, there are millions and tens of millions of dollars being left on the table across the state. We think it's about $237 million that's being left on the table in federal credits, but an additional $25 million in state credits is being left on the table as well.
That's Robin McKinney. here on Maryland Morning 88.1. I'm Sheila Cash. She's director and co-founder of the Maryland Cash Campaign, a nonprofit that helps low-income families find financial stability. According to a policy brief put out by the Cash Campaign and the Maryland Center on Economic Policy, more than 100,000 eligible workers did not apply for the Earned Income Tax Credit. Why not?
A couple of reasons. As I said, the only way you can get the Earned Income Tax Credit is to file a tax return. For some people, they don't have to file a tax return. Maybe their income was lower than a certain amount each year and they didn't file, or they chose not to file. So for some people, it's just as simple as file a tax return. What's great about the Earned Income Tax Credit is you can go back 3 years. So if you realize this year, oh my gosh, I'm eligible and I have been, you can actually go back and amend or do previous tax returns and get that Earned Income Credit. So for some people, they're not filing. For some people, they're just missing it. If they're doing their own tax return or their tax preparer is missing it, they're not realizing that they're eligible for it. And I think a lot of people don't realize maybe they only worked part of the year, or just sort of confused about how it works, that they think that they don't need to file.
And this credit is refundable, right? So it's not that it just reduces taxes you owe. If you owe nothing, you actually get money from the government.
It does. And that is incredibly important, again, as a way to juice up wages, as a way to increase money. The value of work is it's putting money back into people's pockets. It's not just reducing their tax liability. What we know about the Earned Income Tax Credit, which over $1 billion in federal and state credits came into this program to 400,000 Marylanders last year, that's a lot of money coming back into our local economy. And what we know about the Earned Income Tax Credit is when people get their refunds, they're spending it locally. They're spending it on childcare and rent and transportation. They're using it in local communities. So the economic impact of these tax credits means a lot to the family, but it means a lot to the Maryland economy, too, which is why it's so important that this money that's being left on the table could really be helping to get our economy back on track.
Now, employers are required by Maryland law to let employees know about the Earned Income Tax Credit. Do we know how many employers are doing that?
We don't. You know, one part when we passed the legislation 2 years ago is there were a lot of concerns from employers about, you know, a mandate, about what it would mean for them to comply. But complying with this law is actually incredibly simple. They could send an email to every single employee. They don't have to separate it out by who they think is eligible, or they could just send it to every single employee that makes less than $53,000, which is that sort of top cutoff level. It's actually very simple. They could do a stuffer. There are when they send out the 1099s or the W-2s each year, we have information on our website, which is mdcash.org for employers, information about how they can comply with this act. There's also resources on the IRS website, irs.gov, where employers can print out a flyer that has all of the right information on it, and they can put their logo on it. So it's actually very simple to comply.
The legislative history of this credit seems to show that it has bipartisan support, even though one would think that conservatives wouldn't be crazy about the idea of paying money out to families. Why does it have this kind of support?
I think it has support because it rewards work. The 100% first thing you have to do to get the Earned Income Tax Credit is you have to work. You don't have to work full time, but you have to work. It has to be earned income. And I think people get that, and they understand that not everyone has high wages. And so this is a way, again, to sort of boost those wages. Though they're just with any other sort of social program, you always have concerns about fraud. But there's so many checks and balances between the IRS and the comptroller's office and our whole federal tax code that it makes the program actually incredibly efficient to run because no one has to have pure oversight. It's just part of the tax code.
Robin, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Robin McKinney, she's director and co-founder of the Maryland Cash Campaign, a nonprofit that helps low-income families. We've got a link to their website on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. We need your help at WYPR.
I'm producer Matt Purdy. Go to our website to learn more about the segment you just heard, check out our audio archives, or to join in on the conversation yourself. You can also make a pledge to support local programming like Maryland Morning. That's wypr.org/Maryland Morning. Thank you.
Leon Fleischer is a legendary pianist whose career has spanned more than 70 years and whose contributions to the cultural life of the United States and to the world are in so many ways unparalleled. His recordings of solo piano music, chamber music, and concertos are considered the gold standard for pianists. And in 2008, he was inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame. His latest CD, released last summer just before his 86th birthday, has been nominated for a Grammy Award this year. Here's the title track, an arrangement of Jerome Kern's wonderful tune, All the Things You Are. For much of his incredible career, which includes playing, teaching, and conducting, Leon Fleischer has called Baltimore home. He'll be playing a concert Friday night right here in Charm City to benefit the Public Justice Center. He'll be joined on that concert by his son, the singer, composer, and actor Julian Fleischer, as well as Anna Gasteyer, who many folks know from her seven seasons as a cast member of Saturday Night Live, and the jazz pianist Ted Firth. Leon Fleischer joins me this morning in Studio A, and Julian Fleischer joins us from the Argo Studios in New York. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Tom.
So, Leon, this new CD contains pieces that are mostly for your left hand. For folks who follow your career, they know that one of the crucial moments in your life was about 50 years ago when you were diagnosed with a condition called focal dystonia in your right hand, which led you to be playing music written just for the left hand for many years. Give us an update on your right hand at the moment. And how that's feeling.
It's still attached to my body.
There you go.
That's point number one. And I use it from time to time for eating, combing my hair, and playing various pieces that are still within my ability to play. But I would like to pass this on to Julian because I think the playing I'm doing is a certain amount, but it's an event that... is very dear to his heart as well as mine. And Julian, why don't you talk about it?
So, Julian, this is going to benefit a fund that is named after your mom, Ricky Fleischer. Tell us about her connection to the Public Justice Center.
My mom, Ricky Fleischer, was many things in the political life of Baltimore and Maryland, but she was very devoted to the issue of social justice and economic justice. She was a civil rights lawyer. So my sister Paul and I were looking for ways to remember her and to build her legacy after her death. And she was a big fan of the Public Justice Center, which is a national organization that's based in Baltimore that does legal advocacy. And so we decided, with their help, to form a fund there called the Ricky Fleischer Fund for Professional Development, which helps the lawyers there sort of deepen their work and their understanding of the kind of advocacy that they do.
And, of course, that's a great thing that, you know, you can play a concert with your dad to honor your mom. What a terrific opportunity for you. You know, your dad has shown us that one of the things that, of course, he's legendary for is as a teacher and a pedagogue. He showed us that artistry is much more than just physical dexterity. It's that heart and soul and understanding of music and how to communicate it. What has he taught you? You write and perform popular music. Your dad, you know, just classical music. But what has your dad taught you about how to communicate musically?
Oh God, that's such a difficult and loaded question. I don't know. You might ask Dad what he thinks he taught me.
No. Dad? Right, that's fair enough. You guys can just keep throwing this back and forth to each other.
Exactly.
But Leon, do you learn things from Julian too? Let's give you the floor here.
Okay. No, I'm one of his greatest admirers in the most both dispassionate and passionate way. He has a sense of timing, a sense of color. He has a rocking sense of rhythm, which I will take some credit for.
Yeah,
I think it's probably fair to say that rhythm was his dad's thing. You know, listen, it's not like I sat on his knee as a youngster and he gave me lessons about the meaning of music, but he did tend to communicate that rhythm was the most important of the various elements that make up most music. And I think his playing, you know, clearly shows that, and mm-hmm. I try to do the same thing, worry most about the time.
This is a cut from your new album, Julian. It's the title cut called Finally.
Sometime, never, later, whenever, they tell you that's how long it takes for a pot to boil a cake, to bake. Well, China must be out of rice, and cats must all be friends with mice. And hell is surely serving ice, 'cause I think I just fell in love and it's nice.
That's a beautiful tune, Julian, beautiful tune. Finally, title cut from the album. So, Leon, this album has some Gershwin. Your new album has Gershwin and Kern on it, but also has many pieces written for you by guys like George Pearl and Leon Kershner, some classical composers. Did you follow pop music much before Julian got involved in pop music? Is this something
that's part of your
repertoire?
I've always been a fan way back in Billie Holiday's days.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one of my earliest experiences. I was playing in the D.C. area, and I got this invitation from some place, I think it was West Virginia, Alderson, West Virginia. They asked me to come out and play for the inmates at the federal prison there. And lo and behold, I went and played. I played Brahms Handel Variations of all things.
But in the prison. Right?
Yeah, in the prison. Yeah, but in the back row, there was Billie Holiday during one of her stints.
Oh, terrific. Terrific.
You never told me that. You played for Billie Holiday?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. When were you going to mention that?
That's going to be an intermission on Friday.
Yes. Yeah.
Anna Gasteyer is appearing on this show. Here's a clip from an album, Julian, that you produced for Anna Gasteyer. It's a tune called One Mint Julep. You know, we know Anna Gasteyer is this very funny comedic actress on Saturday Night Live, but this girl can sing, Julian. She is really good.
Oh, she's amazing. And that's how she started. And I think she's often eager for people to know that she began her creative career, as a classical singer. She's really legit. She's also from Washington, people in the area will be glad to know. And she found her way to comedy and, you know, ended up having to leave a lot of the singing behind, although some of her funniest bits on SNL were had to do with singing.
Yeah, the Culps, the great teachers with she and Will Ferrell, the teachers in Altadena Middle School. That's some of my favorite bits of all time on Saturday Night Live. How did you two
connect?
While
we're on the subject, I'm sorry, I was just going to say, you know, she's got terrific time. Her rhythm is amazing, and it's why it's fun to record with her, because she just can knock it out of the ballpark.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You do so many things. I mean, you're producing this record, you're writing, you're singing, you're performing, you're acting. Is there one or the other that is harder or easier or more fun or less fun than the other?
Oh, good grief. That's a good question. I would say the most fun thing is the thing I'm doing at the moment, whenever that moment is. You know, I love to be singing when I'm singing. I love to be acting when I'm acting. The problem is they all require a lot of emailing beforehand.
Yeah. They do indeed.
If I could find a way to not email for hours and days before, a 70-minute gig, that'd be great.
Well, Julian Fleischer, it's been great talking to you. Break a leg on Friday night, and appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you very much.
And Leon, always a pleasure to see you, sir, and
My
have a
pleasure,
great time
Tom.
On Friday night.
Thank you, dear.
The legendary pianist Leon Fleischer will join his son, the singer, composer, and soon-to-be legend Julian Fleischer for a concert on Friday night at 7 o'clock at Memorial Episcopal Church in the Bolton Hill neighborhood of Baltimore. The show will also include Saturday Night Live alumna Anna Gasteyer, as well as jazz pianist Ted Firth, and the proceeds will benefit the Ricky Fleischer Fund at the Public Justice Center, an organization that provides legal services and advocacy for low-income folks. It's going to be a great concert for a great cause. We've got the details about the event on our website. Come to wipr.org/Maryland Morning. It's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks to everybody who has become a member or renewed their membership in this, our year-end pledge drive. We appreciate your support. And if you haven't yet made a pledge, why don't you do that? Give us a call at 410-235-1395.
I'm producer Matt Purdy. Go to our website to learn more about the segment you just heard, check out our audio archives, or to join in on the conversation yourself. You can also make a pledge to support local programming like Maryland Morning. That's wypr.org/Maryland Morning.
This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. At 89, Leroy Hofberger can look back on a full life brokering investments and business deals, fostering Jewish education, supporting health research, collecting art. When he was still a boy, his father and uncles were involved in myriad businesses, from Pompeian olive oil to the Baltimore Orioles to ice, coal, fuel oil, and beer. And Roy Hofberger expanded the family's reach to other enterprises, including real estate, especially the development of Germantown, Maryland. Yet Hofberger says he started writing his memoir 6 years ago as a test, just to test if his long-term memory could still pull up the people, events, and decisions that shaped his life. The book he produced is titled Measure of a Life, Memoirs, Insights, and Philosophies of Leroy E. Hofberger. He'll be speaking about it Sunday at the Jewish Book Festival at the Jewish Museum of Maryland, and he's here at WIPR to give us a preview. Welcome to the show.
Nice to be here.
The title is A Measure of a Life, but the most prominent words on the dust jacket are, what we leave behind is far more important than how far we get ahead.
That's correct.
Your book says a lot of stories about how you got ahead, but I gather you would say that's not the real point.
That's correct. The real point is, what kind of a reputation do you leave behind for your children and your grandchildren and your great-great-grandchildren? It's far more important to feel that you have upheld a family reputation, which my family had long before I was born. And I didn't want to do anything to mess that up. So I was told what was expected of me, and those expectations are the way that my father lived his life, and I tried to follow in his footsteps.
As you lay the story out, those expectations and your worry about whether you would meet them were part of what led to what you describe as a lifelong struggle with depression. You describe it, as Winston Churchill did, a black dog that follows you around. Why were you so candid in writing about depression?
Why not? It was a big part of my life. Once I thought we were going to publish it, I realized that there were many people who have gone through what I've gone through, and I want them to know there is light at the end of the tunnel.
How did you find that light?
Well, by a lot of psychotherapy, because when I was designated as being clinically depressed, there were no medications. So the only way that the psychiatrist could treat me, and I had a great psychiatrist, and by the name of Nathan Schnapper, who was a professor at the University of Maryland. And he was the one who met with me year after year until psychotropic medications were discovered. And I think Elevel and Stelazine were the first ones that I was on. They happened to work, and it was a difference between night and day. I felt that I could take pressure, what I consider to be pressure, much easier after I was on those medications. And it gave me, it doesn't cure it. It never will be cured. I will be this way as others who have clinical depression all my life. So I'm on another medication now, but I am doing just as well as I need to do to get through the day and without any great fears overwhelming me from time to time. They may, but I know how to handle them.
That's businessman, lawyer, and philanthropist Leroy Hoffberger here on 88.1 Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about his memoir, Measure of a Life. Your memoir is very detailed. And now that you've done all that sifting and sorting through your memory, is there a lesson, do you think, for other people or advice that you'd give other people?
Well, if they're suffering from depression, my advice to them is what Winston Churchill said, and I mentioned it in my book, never give up. It isn't an easy trail, but it can be successful. And if you stick with it, you're going to probably undergo pain, and you'll think that you can't do something. But if you got the right urging, as Dr. Schnapper would give me, he would be pretty crass in what he would say to me, get up off your butt and get out there and do it. And I respected him, and I said, he said, what's going to happen? You're not going to drop dead. And he said, so try it. If you got to sit down, sit down. So what? And with that kind of encouragement, I went about doing my business.
I really appreciate your talking to us. Thank you. The book is Measure of a Life, Memoirs, Insights, and Philosophies of Leroy E. Hoffberger. Leroy Hoffberger will be speaking about it Sunday at the Jewish Museum of Maryland, one of five authors speaking about their books in the Jewish Book Festival. We have a link to their website on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. We're also linking to interviews we've done with two other authors in the festival, Lauren Silberman, who wrote Wicked Baltimore, Charm City, Sin, and Scandal, and Harry Ezrati. He'll be speaking about 500 years in the Jewish Caribbean. I'm Sheila Cass, glad you're listening, and hope you'll consider supporting WYPR. Here's Nathan with how you can become a sustaining member.